And thanks so much for joining us on Better Beyond 50, where we talk about simple diet and lifestyle tips and strategies to make the second phase of your life the best years of your life. If you haven't already, make sure you check out my free video training where I give you a 6-step plan to great vibrant health after 50. Just head on over to betterbeyond50.com, enter your email, and you'll get instant access to my free training. Now, in today's episode, I'm talking with world-renowned clinical nutritionist and traditional naturopath David Getoff about cholesterol facts and myths. You'll discover why cholesterol is not the demon it's made out to be by most doctors, the truth about how, quote, healthy cholesterol numbers are determined. It's actually not based on research. You'll discover what the research shows for women taking statin drugs. Quite honestly, this will shock you. Why taking cholesterol-lowering drugs can actually do more harm than good, and so much more. Honestly, this interview is going to completely blow your mind. I really hope you like it. Many of our listeners are women who are, you know, they're going to the doctor and the doctor's like, hey, your cholesterol's are out of control, level's out of control. I recommend that you take some statin drugs. And, you know, many of our listeners want alternative approaches. They want to take the natural approach to, you know, changing their diet. I'm taking healthy supplements, and you know, I most of them say that is an absolute last resort if it's even necessary. So, could we start the conversation off with you know, you telling us a little bit about you know, cholesterol without kind of getting too scientific, because I know it can get very technical. But we've been told for years cholesterol is bad. You know, it causes heart disease. You know, you need to take drugs to lower it. Can you kind of just talk about, you say on your website, cholesterol is your friend and ally. What does that mean? Why do we need it? Why is it a good thing?
Well, it's a good thing because it is required by every cell in the body. It is required for nerve function. It is phenomenally required for brain function. So one of the things that I tell people when I'm lecturing on cholesterol is, if you would like to make certain that no matter what other things you do right, that as you get older, you will lose your memory more rapidly than you need to. It's very easy to do that. Simply go on a cholesterol-lowering drug. You have now seen to it that you will lose memory faster than you need to. No matter whether you're in the category that it destroys your memory totally and you get, you know, transient global amnesia, what's happened to people, or whether you just get dementia much faster, you will guaranteed lose your memory faster than you should, because your body knows how much cholesterol it needs. We have feedback mechanisms all over the body. It's astonishing the way our body works. We keep on learning more and more. We're never going to know it all. It's impossible. But one of the things that's important to understand is that we have all these different feedback mechanisms where it decides how much of anything that the body itself manufactures, such as cholesterol, that it requires. And those feedback mechanisms help it to determine how much to make. And cholesterol is made in your liver, the majority of it, although they've now found over the last 10 years that it seems to be able to be made by every cell in your body. That shows how important it's got to be to the body. And so the question is, if your body has decided that it needs a specific amount of cholesterol, and when they test it, they see how much it is making, who are we to say our body is wrong? And so the issue is, do we tell the body, you know, body, you're stupid. Nature is bad. If you're religious, God is bad. You know, whatever your belief systems are, I don't get into that. But they're all wrong. They're all stupid. And I am going to force you to not be able to make what you think, or God thinks, or nature thinks, or my body thinks, which is really the way I want to look at it, should be the amount of cholesterol I need. And that's the reason it starts causing harm. So the issue is, are you really making too much cholesterol? Because the doctor says that's higher than it should be. And if so, why? And also, if so, what should be done about it? So the first question is, are you making too much? No, you're not making too much. Your body's making the amount it needs. Okay, yeah, I might be able to accept that. I totally accept that, by the way. But if the doctor says that it's too much, where is he or she coming from? And the answer is, very sadly, he or she is coming from the information that they have been taught by the representatives who never went to medical school and have never done any research, that are sent into his or her office by the pharmaceutical companies that make cholesterol-lowering drugs. And a lot of your listeners may be thinking, no, wait a minute. The doctor's not deciding what to do, and the country hasn't decided what to do, and the medical establishment hasn't decided what to do based on what the drug companies say. They've decided on research. No, that's not true. They have not decided on research, because currently, here in 2015, there isn't a single research study that has been able to conclusively prove that we need our cholesterol in a specific range. As a matter of fact, there are quite a few research studies, and I don't mean little ones occasionally with 5 or 10 people. I mean studies done with 2,000 people, 3,000 people, 10,000 people that have shown that there isn't any association between it, your total cholesterol number, for example, and heart disease. Mm-hmm. They've taken a look at tens of thousands of people with heart disease, and some of them have total cholesterols of 100, some are 110, some are 120, some are 150, some are 200, some are 250, some are 300. There is no association, and they know that. But research is interesting, because if research is funded by a company that makes a drug to control what is being researched, such as a pharmaceutical company funding the statin research, then it is, according to the medical establishment, this was published in, I think, the Journal of the American Medical Association, I believe it was in Lancet, I think it was in the New England Journal of Medicine, they've all said, or most of them have said, that when you look at research studies with a blind eye, where you're not trying to prove anything, you're just looking at the study to see what does it say and what were they researching, you will find that those research studies that were funded by the pharmaceutical company that makes the drug that's being researched, mm-hmm. are somewhere between 3 and 500% more likely to show that the drug is beneficial than the same study set up independently, mm-hmm. to simply take a look, which is how research is supposed to be done. Mm-hmm. So automatically, a lot of this stuff is being pushed or ushered into a direction by the pharmaceutical companies. Now, for most of you who are, you know, not into looking at research studies and don't realize exactly what happened with cholesterol as we went forward, if you go back not too many years ago, off the top of my head, I'd say 15 or 20, but I could be off by a few years, somebody decided, and it was almost by flipping a coin because there wasn't any research that proved this, that maybe there's an amount of cholesterol that if we go above that number, we have an increase of heart disease. And so a bunch of people got together, looked at all the studies, found that there weren't any studies that had such a number, and made one up. And the number they made up was 240. And so they decided that anything over 240 should be lowered with drugs. And so for the next bunch of years, with statin drugs, you know, at that point coming out, because before that they didn't look at cholesterol. They had no way to regulate it, so they didn't bother to look. But then once they had a drug that could help prevent the body from making it, they started looking. And anytime somebody was over 240 on their total number, they were put on drugs. Again, there was no research behind that. That was just flip of a coin. I mean, people would say this is not possible, but trust me, it is. Go look into it. Mm-hmm. And they started putting people on drugs for this. So they did this for a number of years, and they got people's cholesterol numbers down. And they got them below 240, you know, they got them to 230, 220, whatever, you know, various different people, different drugs, etc. And there was no decrease of any kind whatsoever in heart disease. So rather than somebody say, let's do some more studies and see whether maybe cholesterol is not an issue, or let's examine the current ones more closely and maybe throw out the ones that were done wrong, they said, we must have the wrong number. So they said, let's see, let's make it 220 now. And again, there was no research. When they decided to go from 240 to 220, there was nothing to back that up. And so they went down to 220. And they did that, and they started bringing it down from there. Well, there was no benefit there either. So then they went, well, maybe it's below 200 and it has to be, which is sort of where we are now. Depends on the doctor, but most people are trying to make it the total number below 200. And it's very scary when you do look at the research, because what happens is, any time you look at research, or any time you research something which can have an association with a condition that can cause death. So any time we're looking at something in which one of the possibilities is fatality or death, you must look at one particular thing, or the research should be thrown out and not examined. And that one particular thing is generally referred to as all-cause mortality. Mm-hmm. And the reason that's important is because we already have many drugs on the market that have come in and gone back out because of how many tens of thousands of people they killed. And we have a bunch which are still out there, in which what the drug is being prescribed for has so many side effects, some of which cause fatalities, such as shutting down your liver, shutting down your kidneys, stopping your heart, etc., that you can have a drug which will reduce your likelihood of dying from a specific condition for, let's say, well, let's just make one up, because it's a very good way to explain what I'm saying. So you take this drug, and your likelihood of dying from a specific condition drops by 11%. Okay. But your overall fatality rate goes up by 14% because of all the different side effects. Mm. Nobody would want to take that drug mm-hmm. because all-cause mortality says you're more likely to die on the drug than off the drug. Wow. There are quite a number of drugs on the market like that. And so anytime something is looked at and all-cause mortality is not part of what they look at, then they are doing a massive disservice to anybody except the company that makes the drug, of course. Mm-hmm. So we have to look at all-cause mortality. Well, they've looked at all-cause mortality in a number of the statin issues, and they find that they're not extending anybody's life. Mm-hmm. There is a couple, and there are very few, studies which appear to show that some of the statin drugs really do seem to reduce mortality a little bit. And a couple of the research scientists who said, well, we've already looked at enough research on cholesterol to be able to determine that the total cholesterol number and even the LDL number has nothing to do with mortality or heart disease. Mm-hmm. And so therefore lowering it can't help reduce death. Mm-hmm. So if these studies, which they looked at pretty closely, and they said, we can't find a defect in the study, and yet it seems to show that in those studies, for those particular statin drugs, there seemed to be a little bit of a decrease in even all-cause mortality, since it can't be by lowering cholesterol, what's going on? So they took a look at anything else they could determine that the statin drugs might be able to do, because the research made it very clear that lowering cholesterol couldn't have been the reason, mm-hmm. because there is no association with cholesterol numbers and heart disease as far as total or LDL. There is with HDL. We'll cover that. And what they found was that some of the statin drugs have a little bit of an anti-inflammatory effect.
Reduce inflammation. Yep.
And anybody that has looked at, I mean, even Newsweek and Time and the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and in that last 10 years, there's been something plastered across the whole front page saying, the thing that's killing us all is inflammation. So inflammation is a major issue, and it has a little bit of an anti-inflammatory effect. Mm-hmm. The problem, from my point of view, is you're bringing in something which destroys nerve cells, you're bringing in something which destroys muscle cells. Some people are lucky, actually. They get put on a statin drug, and they're in the smaller percentage of people where it hurts their muscles so much that within a week they can't even stand up for 5 minutes, and the doctor has to take them off it. And that's good because they never should have been put on it. Mm-hmm. But at least they were lucky enough to have a bad side effect, so even the doctor had to take them off it. So, you know, we destroy all these different things. We overload the liver horrendously, which is why when you're on a statin drug, they must do liver testing on you multiple times a year so that if it's about to kill you, they can take you off it. So, you know, that's really, really bad. But there are substances, with my favorite being fish liver oil, or cod liver oil, mm-hmm. or just fish body oil. Mm-hmm. So in other words, fish oil. Mm-hmm. Fish oil or cod liver oil. Mm-hmm. My favorite for years and years, based on a lot of research I've done, happens to be Carlson brand. I have nothing to do with any products I'm talking about. I don't own anything with supplement companies. I just use what works best. Mm-hmm. But the Carlson fish oil or cod liver oil, I have most people take about a tablespoon a day. And that has so much more anti-inflammatory effect than the statin drug, that it gives you a much better reduction in all the things that reducing inflammation will help you with, but every other side effect that it also happens is another benefit instead of a harm. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is taking it because of its anti-inflammatory effects, you're better off on fish oil. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I think is the most damning to the medical profession, And I don't dislike doctors. A lot of my close friends are doctors. A lot of my patients and my students are physicians, MDs and DOs. What I don't like is arrogant ignorance, double standards, and closed-mindedness. Those are the things that are really harmful for a doctor to have any of, and most of them have all three. Closed-mindedness, arrogant ignorance, and they just don't want to learn anything new. They know it all. But this one thing is that if you take a look at all the studies, and they don't all have this, but if you take a look at all the studies which look at gender and age, you find pretty clearly, and this has been duplicated and duplicated and duplicated, that even with these tiny benefits that the anti-inflammatory effect seems to have on a small number of men, and again, you'd be better off taking fish oil, there is no benefit on women. And so if you look at the research, and you can go to my website and go to the published article section, I've got 6, 7, 8, 9 research papers. They're mostly written by medical doctors or researchers on cholesterol. Many of them go over the fact that the studies clearly show zero benefit of any kind, even having to do with the anti-inflammatory, zero benefit of any kind for women. And so in my mind, any physician who puts a female patient on a cholesterol-lowering drug should have their license pulled for gross negligence and maybe even go to jail.
Wow. So there's no benefit for are you saying, if I'm hearing correctly, there's really no benefit for women taking cholesterol-lowering drugs at all?
That is correct. There is no benefit for women. The research shows that very, very clearly. And what a lot of people don't understand, and, you know, obviously we've covered it, so maybe they can have it sink in, is somebody will say, but it lowered my cholesterol.
Well, let's talk about that, David.
But it doesn't matter, because the cholesterol number didn't matter.
Yeah,
so lowering a number doesn't matter, doesn't help you.
Well, let's talk about that, because aren't there health risks in lowering your cholesterol? I mean, you can get to a point where it's too low, and that's not good. What are some of the health problems that can kind of come along with having cholesterol that's actually too low?
Well, the first overall risk is that all of your nerves need cholesterol, and of course your brain is I think, if I remember correctly, something like 80% fat. So you know, all the areas of your body, your entire neurological system. So if the amount of cholesterol that's in your body is below where it should be, then you are most likely, much more likely, to get any neurological condition. I mean, pick one. We're not going to want any of them. I'm not. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about MS or ALS or dementia or anything that's neurological, whatever it is. And a lot of neurological diseases, they say, are of unknown etiology. In other words, they don't even know what causes it, but they've given it a name. If you lower the cholesterol, so the question is, well, but what number is too low? And people need to understand, we are not computers. We are humans. So to say what number is too low for a particular person's cholesterol, below which they're starting to increase their risk of different things, that would be like my saying, well, okay, if you are under 5'6", you are more likely to have, if your shoe size is below or above X or Y. No, it doesn't work that way, because cholesterol is a protective substance. You could almost call it a nutrient, but it's a protective substance. It is an antioxidant. It is a nerve protecting agent. And so how much of any protective substance 5 people, 10 people, or 10,000 people need is dependent on their environment, a little bit of their genes, their activity level, what foods they're eating. I mean, how much vitamin C does somebody need? Well, it depends on the pollution rate in their area. It depends on how much they're being inflamed by using a cell phone or having Wi-Fi or a cordless phone in their house, which I will not have in my house. I mean, all of these things are inflammatory, and so they need more protection from it. And so you can't know how much an individual person needs. And so when they do these studies, which they have done, to see whether or not there's an association with too low a number of cholesterol and a specific thing, and the one that's been looked at a couple times has been cancer, it really isn't going to be exact for you. It's just going to be an overall average.
Mm-hmm.
And so overall average, they found that the people with average rates of cancer have cholesterols of 200 and above. As soon as your number for total cholesterol gets below 200, your cancer rate goes above average. When it gets below 180, it jumps again.
Wow.
When it gets below 160, it jumps a lot. And if I remember correctly, the study that kept on going showed the highest cancer rates in people with a total cholesterol of 140 or below. But 160 is already really, really high. The doctor, of course, who doesn't look at those studies, would go, oh my goodness, your cholesterol, total cholesterol is 140 or 150, 160. That's terrific. I wish you had it. And, you know, at the risk of being mean, because I don't try to like to be mean, I would say, well, good. I wish the doctor did have it, but I wish my patient doesn't. Because I don't want anybody to have any number of anything that's going to greatly increase their cancer rate.
Right,
and so, yes,
right.
Too low cholesterol is an issue. And so the question that you asked is, how low is too low? And my most accurate answer is, too low is below the amount your body believes it needs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if somebody comes into my office and they say, my cholesterol is too high. It's 200, and let's pick a number, 280. And I go, okay, well, first of all, that's not too high, and then we have this big discussion on what the word too high is. That's sort of like taking an African tribesman into New York or Detroit or Chicago or L.A. and having them look up at these skyscrapers and saying, your buildings are too high. I mean, obviously, it's not true.
Yeah.
And Dwayne Graveline, Dwayne Graveline is an MD, PhD, and he's a retired NASA flight surgeon, and he wrote a couple of fabulous books. My favorite is one of the original ones was called Lipitor, Thief of Memory.
Mm.
A more recent one is called The Statin Damage
Yes.
Crisis.
Yes, I've heard about him. Yes.
Yeah, great, great man. I mean, every time I have a question that I want to check something out with, I'll email Dwayne or call him up.
Yeah, he lost his memory, right, after taking Lipitor, and as soon as he stopped taking it, he was able to remember things again.
He got transient global amnesia two times when the NASA people, because he was retired NASA, so he got these fabulous physicals, said, your cholesterol's creeping up a little bit too high, we're going to put you on a drug. And he argued with them back and forth, and they said, no, we got to do something about your cholesterol. And so they put him on a statin drug, and, you know, the next thing he knew, he was walking around his outside his house, and his wife came over and said, what are you doing out here, Dwayne? And he said, who are you? And, you know, they had all sorts of different issues. Finally, it popped back in. He said, nothing has changed in my life except the statin. I'm stopping it. He went off it. And then the following year, of course, had his physical again. And they said, your cholesterol's back up. We're going to have to raise your statin milligrams. He said, well, I stopped it. It caused amnesia. And the doctor said, there's no way that a statin drug is going to have anything to do with your memory. Go back on it. He went back on it. The second round of amnesia he got from it was worse than the first. And he said, that's what's doing it. I'm stopping. And he started doing research. He started calling up NIH. They said, there is absolutely no reason to believe that memory has anything to do with statin drugs or cholesterol. He called up the CDC, got the person in charge of that. They said the same thing. And he said, you know, there's got to be – it can't be. This can't be. And, of course, it is possible.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen to
mm-hmm.
us that we think are associated to something, but we're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But he just was tenacious looking into this. And he found a fabulous woman. Beatrice Golem, MD, PhD, research scientist, UCSD Medical Center, who had been researching this fact. And she said, oh, yeah, it's an absolute fact. The drug companies even know it. And they just say, oh, don't worry about it. People will think it's a senior moment. They won't connect it. So she even found that they knew that it was doing that. And then he got in contact with her, looked at some of her research. Some of the stuff that she put out was so damning that nobody would publish it because of the control that the pharmaceutical companies have on the journals. But there's absolutely no there's no even wonder. Absolutely, without a doubt, it does that. And one of the things that he said that really worried him is that a commercial pilot, those men and women that are up in the cockpit when you and I are flying to a conference or flying to visit somebody, there's a very small, strict number of drugs they're allowed to be on. And if they're on anything outside of that risk, they are not allowed to be flying. They're pulled off. They can't fly.
Mm-hmm.
And here we have something that can cause somebody to all of a sudden go into transient global amnesia, where although they still have their abilities, they don't know where they are.
Wow.
And that's legal. Statin drugs are legal for pilots. And so, you know, he's been trying to get this information out to more and more people with his books and everything. Pharmaceutical companies are just too powerful. It's sad and sickening. So how much should somebody have? A woman comes into me with 280. I go, well, what you should have is 280. The question is, has your cholesterol been watched over the last 5 years? And many people go, no, it's the first time any doctor ever decided to do it. So see, I don't know whether or not that's their normal number.
Okay.
But if somebody says, oh yeah, my doctor runs my cholesterol once a year, you know, in my normal physicals, and you know, don't they run yours? And I go, I haven't had a physical since I was 26 years old, and I needed to get a flight physical before I could get my pilot's license. But, you know, a lot of the doctors do that. And I said, okay, so you said your cholesterol slowly went up. It went up from, you know, 220, 230, 240, and this time they said, look, stop arguing with you. We're going to put you on this drug, and you're asking me about it. And I'm not licensed that I can tell somebody. I can't tell one of my patients, don't take a drug. That's going to get me in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell them that the drug isn't going to do what they want. And I say, okay, so if your numbers have been going up, then that means that your body has been seeing or sensing over the last however many years it took that the amount of this massively fabulous protective thing, cholesterol, that it requires is increasing, which happens in everybody because it's an antioxidant and a protective agent, and we're not exposed and accumulating less and less poisons in our body as we get older. You know, maybe if we lived in a rainforest, if we moved from a city to the middle of the rainforest, maybe our numbers would go down automatically because over a period of 5 or 6 years, we would not be exposed to the poisons and our body would keep eliminating some. But if we live in an industrialized country, the amount of poisons in our body coming in from pesticides and herbicides and, you know, car exhaust and the stuff in our houses and the additives in our cosmetics that for people are not getting clean enough stuff, that keeps on coming into the body. The body keeps on needing more protection. So what I will do with those people is I will go over the way I like people to eat, which is all on my website, the 30-day health diet. People will take a look at that. And I have them change the way they eat. We cut out the starches and sugars and alcohols, which are inflammatory. And we slowly, over a course of 6, 8, 10 months, put them on various different types of kidney support and liver support products so that the body can slowly eliminate and reduce some of the poisons, some of which the body needs cholesterol to protect us from. And as it needs less, it starts making less. That's the way to lower cholesterol. And I'm not trying to lower cholesterol. I'm not doing it because, oh my goodness, your number is too high.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing it because, hey, if we can get some poisons out, that's helpful. That's good for you. You'll live longer. And if your body needs less cholesterol, the number will go down. If not, I don't care.
So it's going up because the body needs it for some reason.
That's correct.
It's
absolutely
trying to heal something, and the best way to normalize it is not necessarily through taking drugs, as we've talked about, by eating clean and living a healthy lifestyle. That's the best way to sort of get it to where your body sort of wants it or needs it to be. Am I hearing you correctly?
That is exactly correct.
Okay.
Wherever your body needs it to be, and there is no number that is correct, that is completely bogus. All the experts know that. There is no number, and one person's healthy cholesterol maybe is 240, and maybe their spouses or partners is 265, and maybe their younger kids who are maybe 16 or 17 haven't accumulated as much poisons yet in their body.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe theirs is 190, and that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to try and put a size 11 foot on somebody who has a size 11 shoe on somebody that has a size 6 foot because somebody says that's the proper one.
What about, David, you know, what about the difference between, like, good and bad? You know, that we say, hey, HDL's good, LDL's bad. This is sort of becoming a completely outdated way of thinking about cholesterol. Because as you just said, it really doesn't even, there is no sort of magic number for everybody. Is there any truth to breaking it down into those subcategories, or is that just nonsense as well?
There is a little truth and not too much. So first of all, I like people to understand that if there is a substance that you would be dead without, I'm not calling it bad. So if we had a switch, if you and I had this magic switch and we could just flip this switch from off to on, and as soon as we switched it to on, it would magically remove all of the HDL in all of our listeners' bodies, they would drop dead.
Mm-hmm.
If it instead only removed the LDL, the bad cholesterol, they would drop dead.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
If it only removed us, so in other words, anything which we require, we require LDL, we require HDL. The LDL actually carries a lot of our fat-soluble nutrients. It may even be more important than the HDL, but I wouldn't want to say that. They're both very, very important. But what happens is that in general, overall, HDL seems to be more anti-inflammatory and more protective. That doesn't mean we don't need the other one. We badly need it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only thing that they found about the three cholesterols, the HDL, the LDL, and the total, which is just, you know, both of them together, and they get broken down further, we'll cover that for a couple minutes, is that if you have a greater amount of HDL to LDL, generally you have better protection. So in other words, if somebody had, let's pick a number, 250 total, and their HDL was 38, and the same person had 250 total, but their HDL was 58, the research does conclusively show that the person with the higher HDL has a lower rate of heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting a higher rate of anything else. It's not like, oh, well, that goes down, but something else goes up.
Mm-hmm.
So HDL does have protective benefits. So I don't worry about the total. I don't worry about the LDL. I'll look at them because it's interesting for me when I do liver support and kidney support and neurological support, and I change somebody's diet, and I pull out inflammatory substances, and I teach them which shampoos and soaps and cosmetics and you name it don't have toxic chemicals in them, and they switch over to them, and the body doesn't need to protect itself so much. It's interesting to watch the cholesterol number go down because the body doesn't need it as much.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to see that because it just means this is one more indicator of everything working. But otherwise, I don't care. However, the HDL, which is called the good cholesterol, we do have one thing we have to understand, and that is the old statement of you can have too much of a good thing is also true of HDL.
Mm-hmm.
And Sam Queen, who's a research chemist in Colorado Springs, did a lot of work with HDL. He probably still is. And he found that because it is a protective substance and because the body makes it to help protect it from something, if you take a look at something, and you could, you know, call a total cholesterol similar, because I've just gone over that, if the number starts to go too high, if nothing else, at least it's an indicator that the body is going, oh my, I have to really, really protect myself. And where's the number? You know, which digits, how high does it have to get before, instead of being an indication that the person has a lower heart disease risk, it becomes an indication that, oh my, this person is way too toxic. And somebody better work on that. The HDL will take care of itself. But if somebody could do 2 years of detoxification with that person so that the HDL goes down, they're less likely to get a neurological disease from the poisons that it isn't representing, but that it's showing you are there by the fact that the body needs it.
Mm-hmm.
And what he determined in his research was that that number is somewhere around 85 for HDL. He said, so if somebody's HDL, because they're starting to exercise more, that raises HDL. Because they're taking fish oil, that raises HDL. Because they're eating a lot more garlic, that raises HDL. These are all good things. But if somebody's HDL, instead of being 50 or 60 or 70, which are very good numbers, if somebody has an HDL of 60 or 70, I'm really happy. If instead, all of a sudden, it's 85, 88, 90, I've had people in here with 110, that is a warning sign. That's telling you, oh my God, this person is so toxic, the body's making that much HDL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to lower the HDL. We're not going to find a drug to do that. That's not the idea.
Mm-hmm.
We really have to work on detoxifying this person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then, of course, they've got all these others that they've come up with recently. And I think the pharmaceutical company is trying to protect their, what do they call those things? Their golden egg.
Yeah.
Because the statin drugs make them billions of dollars a year. It's some of the, it's either the most or the second most profitable drug in the industry. And so since more and more people are finally learning the things that we're teaching here to all of your listeners, because there are so many books out by medical doctors and research scientists, I mean, there's probably 25 books on the benefits of cholesterol and what's going on. That have come out in the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
lots and lots of them out there, that they're trying to find a way to hold on to this golden egg. And so now they've developed the VAP test, VAP, where they split the cholesterol sections into different parts, and we have bigger and smaller and more fluffy and less fluffy,
yes,
and they're
right,
going, well,
right.
This particular LDL is fine, but that one is
right,
bad.
Right.
Nonsense. Nonsense. Yes. I still don't care.
Yes.
I really still don't care.
Yes.
It's still, I don't care about the total. I don't care about the LDL. I want the HDL to be high as long as it's below 85, and I will change diet, lifestyle, and other things to get it there. There is one other test. There aren't too many labs that run it, which has been shown to be I was going to say accurate, but accurate is the wrong word for testing. Accurate just means it's showing what it says it's going to show.
Mm-hmm.
Valid is where we want to test that actually that what they say it means is correct. So there's one more test that is a valid way to determine heart disease risk as far as cholesterol is concerned, and that's called oxidized LDL or LDL comma oxidized depending on the lab. Because if you've got lots of LDL, but because you're getting enough vitamin C and vitamin E complex and everything else, it's all protected and doing its job, then it doesn't cause an issue. If we aren't protected well enough, then all sorts of fatty acids in your body, including cholesterol, can cause an issue. And so the oxidized LDL test, you know, is one more thing to look at. But because homocysteine and C-reactive protein are so much more accurate in looking at heart disease, if somebody says, well, but if that's no good, how do I look at my heart disease rate? I go, well, the studies are pretty clear. You take a look at your C-reactive protein, CRP, and we make sure that that's low enough. We take a look at your homocysteine, and we make sure that's low enough. And if they're not, we do the diet changes and supplements to get them down where they belong.
And are these tests that someone can do, like, with their general practitioner? Or if someone wanted to have these tests done, where would they go to do them?
Those tests are so well recognized, except, you know, the cardiologists know them better, that if somebody has been told that your cholesterol is too high, then the first answer you should give to your primary or whoever it is that told you that is, well, I've taken a look at a lot of the research, and apparently homocysteine and cardio or high sensitivity, two words for the same test, cardio or high sensitivity C-reactive protein are much more accurate. Can we run those so we can take a look at it? If the doctor doesn't say, good idea, find another doctor.
Right. Gotcha.
And also people should understand, do not ever believe the range that's printed on the lab report. The lab report always prints, almost always, some of them are not doing it anymore, but they should, what's called a reference range. And the reference range are normal, whatever the heck that means, values. So they'll take a group of people, 1,000 people, a couple thousand people, who don't have a diagnosed illness, who are, you know, maybe coming in for an annual checkup or something, and they will take a look at what these different things are they're examining, and this will give them a reference range, because these are people that are supposedly healthy. But, of course, they're not healthy. Many of them are going to be diagnosed with a condition in the next 5 years that they already had, but nobody knew it.
Mm-hmm.
So the reference range, or normal value range, really is not a healthy range. And so if a range for something, for example, says, oh, normal range for this is from 6 to 15. Well, then we have to examine what is this substance that they're taking a look at. I mean, what is this substance? Is this a substance that too much of it is bad, that not enough of it is bad? And we take a look because we may find that a healthy number would be between 7 and 8, nowhere near 15. But it comes back as 14. The doctor takes a look at it and says, oh, well, that's not a problem. And a holistic professional that knows it looks at it and goes, oh, my God, that's a major problem. We have to work on it. So never believe the ranges that are on there. You have to get more information from somebody that can tell you what the health areas really or health zones really are.
Okay, so someone who's a lot more experienced at reading those tests.
Well, not reading them, because usually reading them just means looking at them and seeing what it says, but more experienced in what the ranges of a healthy person would be.
Okay. David, before you talked about, making healthy dietary changes before to kind of reduce inflammation in the body, you know, a lot of times, and I've even seen this like in my own family members, they go to the doctor says, I'm concerned about your cholesterol, I recommend this drug, but I also recommend that you cut the saturated fats and the foods that have cholesterol in them, right? So, which drives me crazy. I still sort of have this like back and forth discussion with my mom. So I'm hoping she's going to hear your interview and something will click, because she still thinks that, you know, having too many eggs or eating too many meat or butter, or, there are certain foods that, hey, this clogs the arteries. This is going to raise the cholesterol. Can you talk about the problem when we've actually been told, for many years, cut the saturated fat. And hey, let's increase the grains. I mean, even Cheerios is part of their marketing. And honestly, you look at the front of the box and there's a heart. It's a heart cereal bowl with the Cheerios in it. And it says clinically proven, right, to, reduce cholesterol. And it drives me crazy because it's the exact opposite. It's not true, right? I mean, based on the research that I'm doing, if anything, we want to increase the good fats. And we want to reduce the processed grains. Can you talk a little bit about, what are some of the health problems when you take the good stuff out and you start increasing some of the processed grains? I mean, how does that impact us?
Well, first of all, the American Heart Association will give the heart healthy label to something 100% based on it being low in fat.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter whether or not it's something that promotes heart disease horribly. Let me turn that off. They're only giving it to low in fat, which is really, again, that if we looked at scientifically, then the things that we know that would be heart healthy are things that are high in good fats, and because the good fats are good for us, and they help stabilize blood sugar, and that are low in the two things that we know cause heart disease. And those two things are sugars and starches. So if they were going to put that heart healthy label on things legitimately instead of nonsensically for no reason whatsoever, then it would only go on things in which the amount of sugar and the amount of starch had either been reduced by putting in more fats and proteins or simply wasn't in that substance because it wasn't needed, as long as they didn't replace the sugar with a toxic artificial sweetener. And when people say, what's a toxic artificial sweetener? It's any artificial sweetener.
Mm-hmm.
If it was made in a lab mm-hmm. and didn't exist on the planet Earth without somebody manufacturing it in a lab, including the ones where they took natural substances and combined them in a way that nature can't, it's still made in a lab,
right.
Then we don't want to do that.
Right.
So, yes, fats have been demonized for years and years and years and years, with saturated fats being the most demonized. And the reasoning is ludicrous because, number one, they would do autopsies and they would take a look in the blood vessels and they'd say, well, look at all this cholesterol. Obviously, cholesterol causes heart disease. And Dr. Graveline says that that's sort of like saying that if every single time the person that happens to be a fire buff and has a police and fire scanner, every time there's a fire it's close enough that he or she can get to it and they hear it, listed on the scanner and they jump in their car or bicycle or whatever and go over and take a look, there are firemen there trying to put out the fire. And the larger the fire is, the more firemen they are, and therefore he writes up an article that firemen cause fires because whenever there's a fire, there are firemen. And he said, now obviously that's stupid because people know that there were brought over there to try and put the fire out, but people don't understand that cholesterol was applied to the wall of the blood vessel
mm-hmm.
because the body sensed that it was being damaged
mm-hmm.
by inflammation, by chlorine, by fluoride, by whatever, and is patching the damaged blood vessel with cholesterol. So the cholesterol is the fireman, and we don't put up a roadblock to stop the fireman, and we don't put up a roadblock to stop the cholesterol. So that's one of the reasons that they originally thought cholesterol was a bad guy. Now they've done more research studies and they found that actually they often find a whole bunch of polyunsaturated fats there because the body doesn't like polyunsaturated fats because in nature there weren't that many of them. We got a lot of saturated fats, and if the animals ate correctly, grass-fed beef, grass-fed lamb, pastured everything, then there was an anti-inflammatory fat that was in there, which we call omega-3s, where the ones the body uses are EPA and DHA, the ones that are in fish oil. Neither one exists in a plant. So when somebody has flaxseed oil, you are getting an omega-3 the body has to convert,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully your body's conversion mechanism is working. But when you get it in salmon, wild-caught salmon, or grass-fed beef, which has just about as much, as long as somebody doesn't make a mistake and trim the fat off, I leave all the fat on there,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
then you're getting an anti-inflammatory fat. So we really want a high good fat, low bad fat diet with as little starch, sugar, and alcohol. And I gave them a name. I've always referred to starch, sugar, and alcohol in a category of foods that prevent the body from properly regulating blood sugar and harm our ability for future health. And so I named them sabotage foods. And earlier this year, I got a registered trademark on that. So I've got a trademark up on my wall. I now own a trademark where anytime I use sabotage foods, I can put that little R with a circle around it on it. That's my trademark. And those are the things that are really screwing up our health. Mm-hmm. So the people that are going out there and going, oh, yes, well, I for health purposes, I make sure to get low-fat dressings. I get low-fat yogurt. I get low-fat cottage cheese. You're hurting yourself mm-hmm. because those are fats. And again, I don't care whether somebody believes in Mother Nature, Father Time, your own type of God, whichever it is, they put things correctly. And when we screw them up, we make them unhealthy. So if we screw them up by telling the cattle, we don't tell them, we just don't let them do anything they want. So, but by telling the cattle, sorry, you can't have grass and weeds anymore. We're not going to let you. We know that's your proper species specific diet, but that's too bad. We're going to leave you in one little place. And there's not going to be any grass left after the first 20 minutes, and we're just going to give you a bunch of corn and soybeans, then the fats that get made in that animal's tissues are completely different than the ones that get made in the animal's tissues if it's out on pasture eating grass and weeds. Mm-hmm. And so every time we eat the wrong fats, we cause a problem. So we want a high good fat, low bad fat diet. And one of the other things that happened is a couple of very intelligent, very ignorant people, and people need to understand that those two words have nothing to do with one another. People, I mean, somebody will stop me and say, wait a minute, very intelligent, very ignorant people? Well, yeah, intelligence is a defined term. It's rated in IQ. And ignorance simply means you don't know something. So I'm a very intelligent person. I'm a member of Mensa. I'm a member of Intertel. So what? I'm a completely ignorant in aircraft mechanics and all sorts of other things that I don't know anything about. Yeah, ignorance is a bad word. No, it isn't. It just means I don't know a whole bunch of stuff in right. fields I'm not interested in.
Right.
And so I made up a bumper sticker recently, which I give to my patients if they want. It's up on my wall in front of me. It says, arrogant ignorance, a progress-stopping trait of very smart people.
Wow, I love that.
So we need people to understand how many things they don't know. So these two people that are very smart and very ignorant, one of them was Dean Ornish, and the other is another medical doctor. I don't usually use his name often, so it's not in my – if it pops in, I'll mention it. But both of these people – McDougall, John McDougall and Dean Ornish, two medical doctors, very intelligent people, totally ignorant about all the research of fats and oils. Mm-hmm. And so both of these people have done, especially McDougall, he would bring to a conference a large blob of saturated fat. And sometimes if it was hot weather and it would be melting, he'll bring it in a plastic replica form. And he would show it to people and he'd say, look, of course saturated fats are horrible for you. At room temperature, they're a big mass. How could they not clog up your arteries? And, you know, I go over that in my classes and I go, which is thicker, harder, and less likely to get through your arteries? The saturated fat or a piece of broccoli? Well, obviously the piece of broccoli, it's 10 times harder than the saturated fat. Mm-hmm. But we're not injecting the saturated fat or the broccoli into our arteries or veins. We're eating it. So our body is digesting it. It's breaking it down. In case you hadn't noticed, your body isn't at room temperature. It's way hotter than that. And so it's a total ridiculous myth and example they're right. giving, right. and it doesn't hold any water.
Right.
And recently the field of fats and oils research has been blessed. I'm still trying to contact. We've gone back and forth in emails, and I'm still trying to get a phone call with this woman. I love her. A new book came out last year. And the title of the book is The Big Fat Surprise. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, of course, when I first read the title, I said, oh, The Big Fat Surprise. But actually, it's The Big Fat Surprise. Nina, forget her last name. It's a little bit hard to
talked about her on your website. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So her book, and it's available as an audiobook from Audible, so people don't have time to read like me, you know, buy the audiobook and then listen to it unabridged. She has looked at every single research study in the past, I was going to say 30, but it's probably 50 or 60 or more years on fats and oils, every single one. And she's just ripped them apart. She's taken a look at everything. If the study appeared to show something that from her diligence in investigative journalism didn't make sense, she called the researchers up.
Mm-hmm.
And she got copies of their raw data.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was able to show exactly why every study was good or bad,
mm-hmm.
and why what it showed was helpful or harmful. And it's all written up in the book, and she did an amazing job. I mean, this is the first time I have ever read a book in which it goes over research over and over and over again, but in a pleasant way. It's not like, I don't want to listen to a book on research. No, it's just fascinating. She did a good job. In which nobody is going to be able to legitimately attack her facts, because her facts are flawless.
Mm-hmm.
And they're even more than flawless, because often she dissects the study after talking to the researchers and gets more information than was even in the study.
Right.
So since they can't attack what she's saying about the study, what do they attack?
Mm-hmm.
You tell me.
Well, they'll probably try to attack, say she's not a scientist.
Right,
or...
exactly. They attack her. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, oh, she's not a scientist, she's not this, she's not that. And it's really interesting. But, you know, if you have a four-year-old that says 1 times 3 is 3 and 1 plus 3 is 4, and a mathematics professor that says it's not true, the four-year-old is still the one that's right.
Right.
And so people don't seem to understand a fact is a fact is a fact, regardless of who said it. And a fallacy is a fallacy, regardless of the number of initials after your name.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when somebody says something to me about, you know, all of the stuff that I've accumulated over the years of CCN and CTN, FAIM, BCIM, and C, all this stuff, I go, it's irrelevant. It's wallpaper. It's toilet paper on my walls. The only thing I want is facts.
Yeah.
And I really don't care anything about anything other than knowing the facts. And if somebody wants to tell me that, well, my doctor went through medical school, my answer is, you're right. And that's the reason he has so much incorrect information. And I've had two medical doctors at medical conferences that I attended. Two different medical doctors, it was like 15 years apart, that both made almost an identical statement. And I wonder how often this happens. I bet it doesn't happen very often. And these doctors were lucky, not only that they heard it, but that they remembered it. Each one said in their first year at medical school, in one of the lecture halls, one of the MD PhD professors said, there's a very important piece of information I want you all to listen to and remember. Approximately 50% of what you're going to learn here during all the following years is correct, and approximately 50% is wrong. We are teaching you the best we can. If we knew it was wrong, we would stop saying it, but we continually find out that things we taught people were wrong, and then we change it, and something else is wrong, and then we change it. So just remember as you leave here that probably around 50% of what we taught you is wrong, and don't stop learning. That is such a phenomenal piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it went in one ear and out the other of most of the doctors.
Yep.
But the ones who listened and went, wow. So that would mean that if my patient comes in and says, Doc, I just read an article that says something that you said is wrong and that it's actually the opposite. The proper answer is, bring me the article. Let me take a look at it and let me look into it.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, well, no, I mean, if it disagrees with what I was taught, obviously you're wrong. And that's totally incorrect,
mm-hmm.
because we keep on learning new things all the time.
Mm-hmm.
In my classes, I tell people, please tell me why I love being proven wrong. In the current class, nobody answered, and I had to answer. In every other class I had, somebody raised their hand and said, because it means you learned something new.
Mm-hmm.
I said, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Thank you, because if you can prove that something that I said is wrong, I will thank you. I will research it really, really well. Because probably what somebody told you is wrong, because I've been doing this for a long time, but I will look into it, and I will massively thank you if you correct me on something.
And that's actually such a rare trait, because I know as a health coach, when I'm giving health advice, obviously, you know, we're talking about medications and such. I will direct people to other resources, but I obviously will never say stop taking that or don't do that. Just legally and ethically can't do that. But it's really astonishing to me how many times my clients will come back to me and say, my doctor did not want to hear it. I had one client say the doctor literally threw the paper. She grabbed it and threw it. And
yes, I had a couple people who I gave a paper on something to give a doctor. It was actually a woman whose mom had brain cancer, and she was going to be getting radiation. And the mom was not my patient, never met her. She said, my mom's going to be getting radiation for this glioblastoma, and wouldn't you have her take a whole bunch of antioxidants? And I said, absolutely I would. And back then I had just finished reading a recent paper on the tremendous benefits of taking large doses of antioxidants during radiation for glioblastoma. It was published on that exact condition, showing that the healthy cells were protected and the cancerous cells were not. And I printed her out a copy of the article, and I handed it to her, and she called me up the next week, and she said, I handed it to my doctor, telling him what it was. He ripped it up and threw it in the garbage in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, the only thing that then, after that, didn't happen that should have, and I said, I'm sure it didn't happen. She said, what? Is you didn't curse at him, tell him you were going to put a complaint in his medical file and walk out the door and find another doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, yeah, you're right. That
mm-hmm.
didn't happen, and
mm-hmm.
it probably should have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, she got all the radiation, and she died. And how much longer we could have kept her alive, I don't know, because I don't have a crystal ball.
Yeah.
But when somebody has research published in a journal, and their answer to it, if it disagrees with what they're telling you, is to rip it up and throw it out, the best thing to do is to leave that doctor's office, and the second best thing to do is to report them.
Yeah. Yep. Good advice. David, I just wanted to – we're going to wrap things up here. We've had a – you've shared some great stuff, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time. I just wanted to circle back to statin drugs for a second.
Sure.
I've had a number of people tell me that they get – I don't even think they sort of make the connection, but one of the things I always ask my clients to do is fill out, you know, questionnaires about – how they're feeling and, you know, any sort of symptoms they're experiencing. And a lot of times they'll write things down and I'll say, oh, this is interesting. And just based on the research that I've done on statin drugs, there are some sort of, you know, we talked about memory before, memory loss. What are some of the other sort of potential side effects or risks that are associated with statin drugs? I mean, because there are some health, you know, health problems or that can sort of result as a, you know, from taking them. Can you kind of just outline some of those?
Sure. Well, a couple of the ones that have enough research that we pretty much know them for a fact are that they increase your risk of diabetes. They increase your risk of all sorts of different types of memory problems. They increase your risk of any type of neurological condition. There is absolutely no question about those. Those are very, very well known. And by the way, you can go to Dwayne Graveline's website. He has a lot of stuff on that. His website is, because he was a retired NASA flight surgeon, his website is SpaceDoc. I forget if it's .net or .com. But I think it's .net, but either way, Space Doc. And he's got a lot of stuff there. He's always coming out with new things. And the biggest one is anything that is related to your body's ability to remove poisons. And that's very important.
Okay.
Because when you have a drug, when you have a pharmaceutical that is so well proven to destroy liver function that the doctor must, they are required to continually run liver function tests on you as long as they have you on that drug,
mm-hmm.
X number of times a year. I don't know what it is currently, whether it's 3 or 4 or whatever, to make sure that they haven't destroyed your liver so much that they then have to take you off the drug that they told you you had to be on, which is always amazes me. Well, but doc, you said I had to be on it. Well, yeah, but now we're killing you faster with it. Oh, really? And where's that dividing line? So anything that has to do with liver function.
Mm-hmm.
So the liver, not just the pancreas, the liver also, is
mm-hmm.
one of the organs responsible for blood sugar control, which is one of the reasons that it's increasing diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
The liver is responsible for every type of detoxification. So almost every neurological condition that you have is also being caused not just because of the lack of cholesterol, most likely, but because you are hurting the organ that's responsible for a good part of pulling poisons out of your body. So you pick a condition that has any relationship whatsoever to poisons in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And the statin drugs are going to increase that because they're reducing your body's ability to get rid of it. So there are many. Space Doc has a bunch of them on there, but there are many, many. And I should really just mention so that people don't have to go hunting all over. I mean, I mentioned homocysteine and I mentioned C-reactive protein, but I didn't give you some ranges. So for homocysteine, the lab will generally tell you, depending on the lab, because they don't even agree. One lab will say anything under 13 is fine. One will say anything under 12 is fine. I've seen a couple that say anything under 15 is fine. I consider a healthy number for homocysteine to be between 5 and 9, with lower being better. So if somebody's at 9, I'd really like to get it lower. I mean, my druthers would be 6, 7, or 8. But as long as it's 9 or below, it's acceptable to me as we work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the doctor will be happy with a 10, 11, or 12. And the C-reactive protein, and again, it has two different names. It's called either C-reactive protein. It's abbreviated. It's just called CRP. Mm-hmm. It's called high-sensitivity C-reactive protein because they had two different ways to test it. Or the high-sensitivity is also called cardio C-reactive protein. And the labs currently say that a healthy number, well, again, they don't say healthy, a normal number. Mm-hmm. Most of the labs say is between 0 and 3. 3 is a horrible number. So as far as I'm concerned, I want it as much below 1 as I can help the person get it. My preference would be 0. But if somebody said, well, where would you really like it to be? I would say between 0 and 0.5, so between 0 and a half for the high sensitivity or cardiac C-reactive protein. Because that, so that way your listeners have that and they can write it down.
Excellent. And David, I just wanted to kind of leave someone with some take-home action points here. So I'm listening to this. I'm just going to kind of put myself in the shoes of a listener. I'm listening to this. I'm on a statin drug and I'm saying, you know, I don't want to be on it anymore. What are my next steps? What do I do? Just stop taking it, talk to my doctor, see a different doctor. What do you tell someone to do now that they're equipped with this information?
Well, again, as you said, I mean, neither you nor I, since we're not medical doctors and we're certainly not cardiologists, are going to tell somebody stop taking that drug.
Right.
So I'm not going to tell somebody stop taking it. What I will tell them is I want you to make sure that I am not the reason you stop it. I want you to be able to tell people, oh, no, I took a look at a whole bunch of different things and everybody agreed. So the first thing I'll have them do is go to my website, click on the published articles button, and the first group is all on fats and cholesterol. So read 3 or 4 of those, and you'll highlight the stuff you want in there. You'll have a couple of them which clearly say for women it doesn't matter at all. It's just so you have enough information behind you that you're not going to put it on any one person, that you can say the research says that. Then you decide whether you want to tell your doctor, I've looked at all this stuff and I'm not going to take the statin drug anymore. There are certain types of drugs, most of them are psychiatric medications and depression and all sorts of things like that, where they must be tapered very, very slowly over 5 or 6 or 7 months or you cause massive side effects. To the best of my knowledge, which is not perfect, that is not true of statin drugs. But the person who has the most information on drugs will never be your doctor. It will always be your pharmacist. So what I tell people to do is if you have decided after looking at all these different research studies and listening to as many people as you want to listen to that you are going to stop the statin drugs, what you do is you tell a little fib. You go into your pharmacist and you say, I've read a bunch of stuff on statin drugs. I talked to my doctor about it. And he said, yeah, if you want to stop them, stop them. You know, I want you on them, but if you want to stop them, stop them. Go ahead. And, tell this to the pharmacist and then say, but you know, I know that you guys, and I'm not talking about the person behind the counter. I mean, you ask them to bring the pharmacist out. That's a different person. I want the person who is a registered pharmacist. And you say, but I don't trust the doctor's knowledge on pharmacy. So he said, if you want to stop it, just stop it. I just want to find out from you because you're the expert in that area. Is that something I can just stop outright or do I have to taper? And now you've got it from the expert. But if you don't tell him that your doctor said it was okay, he can't talk to you.
Okay.
The other thing that you really want to do, which of course would be a separate lecture, is you want to check your heart disease, your vitamin D rate, vitamin D level, because your risk of heart attack goes down by 50% if your vitamin D is above 34, and it goes down for a lot of other conditions like stress fractures and multiple sclerosis, it goes down by 80% if your vitamin D level is above 50. Mm-hmm. And so I want all of my patients to get their vitamin D, and the name of the test is 25OH vitamin D. I want them all to get their vitamin D level tested. It takes 3 months when you take it, when you change your dose, for it to re-normalize at whatever that dose is going to hold you. So you get it tested. If your level happens to be where I want it, which is between 55 or 60 and 80, so 55 to 60 up to 80 is where I want it to be for the 25OH vitamin D, then whatever you're taking is the right amount, keep doing it. But if it's less than that, you boost it up, you take another 3 or 4,000 a day, and in 3 months you test it again. If it's now in the right place, that's your new dose. If it still isn't there, we go up a couple thousand more and test it again in 3 months. So, you know, one of the things you can do to reduce heart disease risk, multiple sclerosis risk, hypertension, stress fractures, pancreatic cancer, cancers all combined. That's one of my favorite studies done with the Vitamin D Council. Combined cancers, 77% reduction if you get your vitamin D level just over 40, and they're still doing research. Wow. But many of the things, in order to get your lowest risk, your D has to be above 52. Mm-hmm. And so I say 55 to 80. And you are reducing so many risks, it's amazing. And that's, and vitamin D is cheap. Just get a good vitamin D3 in a little gel cap. Carlson is a good brand. They've got it in drops and gel caps. And that will help in many, many different ways.
Good. That was a nice little bonus tip there. Talking about the vitamin D.
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Well, David, if someone wants to learn more about you, maybe they're interested in working with you. I know you have like a waiting list you're really hard to get in with, but if someone is in dire need, or maybe they just want to start by learning more about you and then kind of go from there, where is the best place to go?
Best place to go is always, I mean, my website is Naturopath for You, but so many people put in the wrong spelling of four, or they misspell naturopath, that I bought davidgetoff.com, and it just redirects you. So everybody can spell David. That's pretty easy. And most people actually misspell get off because they can't believe that it's simply get off. And so they add an extra T. They take one of the Fs off. They'll put an H in the middle. But it's not. It really isn't. It's just G-E-T-O-F-F.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Better Beyond 50. I hope you enjoyed it. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe on betterbeyond50.com. iTunes, the podcast app, or wherever else you might be listening to this show. And if you have a minute, please leave me a quick review on iTunes. I love to hear from you. If you think someone else might like this free show, please take a minute to share it with a friend or family member so she can benefit from it too. And don't forget to sign up for my free video training and newsletter. Again, just enter your email at betterbeyond50.com to get instant access and make sure you never miss a future show. This is Melissa Kerner signing off, and thanks again for listening. I hope you have a fantastic week. Talk to you soon.